Let's talk some hockey. Jake Hahn joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at jhahn4hahn, the number four. He, of course, the co-host of The Point and the Fantasy Hockey Show on SiriusXM NHL. Jake, what's happening, man?
Not much, guys. French Open going on. I know, Gil, you're dialed into that. I've placed a couple of wagers here, and I'm dipping my toe into the water a little bit. And I heard you reading some tweets there, swallowing the whistle. We had some swallowing of the whistle last night in the National Hockey League. Carolina, Montreal, overtime, big game, 1-1 series. You could have committed a murder, I believe, in that overtime. And I don't think that you would have. I don't think it would have been a penalty. The only way you're getting a penalty, I guess, these days is puck over glass, which is kind of a silly call, but it is what it is. It's a black and white call, so you got to call it. It's the only way, I guess, you're getting a penalty in overtime these days.
An actual homicide could have been committed, and Jake said play on.
Yes,
play at on. That point yesterday.
Play on. Hurricanes, let the boys play.
Hurricanes, by the way, take a 2-1 lead in the best of seven Eastern Conference final with a 3-2 overtime win over the Canadiens.
Was it offside, Jake? I have no clue. I swear to God, they're talking about a game I had on mute and I'm watching it. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here.
In reference to the goal that Montreal scored in regulation, it was offside. And then that was a quick review. I think it took one look at it and you see he didn't have possession of the puck. He crossed over first. So that one was pretty cut and dry, Kelly. I do believe that was offside. And then you get an overtime. And I mean, you can make a long list of calls that probably should have been made or would have been made in any other situation. But the refs put the whistles away in overtime and that old adage, let the boys play. And I've always been of that mindset, guys. I want to see it settled 5-on-5. I like 5-on-5 hockey. I don't want to see it, with a fringy penalty. But at some point, a penalty is a penalty, and you got to call it. I do think there was a couple on both sides, Montreal and Carolina, that each team got away with in that overtime last night.
Let me ask you a couple questions here, because the Hurricanes, I talked about, 85 Oilers went 9-0 to start the playoffs. Hurricanes went 8-0. They couldn't get to 9. They lost the first game here in this series to the Canadiens. But they are now 10-1 in the playoffs. The greatest record to 16 in the 16-win playoff format is the 16-2 88 Oilers. The Hurricanes, as you pointed out, are 10-1 now. So they've been that dominant on pace, at least, towards that record. The group chat that I'm in, Chris Felica, Todd Wishnev, Steve Fezzik, Will Hill, the consensus on this series is that the Hurricanes are way better than the Canadiens and that the fact that these games are close is kind of the surprise. Do you agree with that generally?
I would agree with the fact that the Carolina Hurricanes are way better. I don't think it's really that close. Now, the one thing I will say, I'm not shocked that the games are close just because of who Montreal has between the pipes and Jakub Dobish. And if you look back at Carolina's previous two series, Philly and Ottawa, yes, they did win all eight games, but there was a bunch of games there where it was close. Carolina plays a lot of games that are just one goal games. They haven't really had a game where the offense is totally opened up. They go out there and win, 5-0, 5-1. That's been rare for the Hurricanes in the postseason. So yes, they dominate puck possession, they dominate the shot clock, all those sorts of things. But yet you look at the score and you go, okay, well, it's 2-2 or it's 3-2. And the Canes have been good at getting that goal when they've needed it throughout the course of this postseason. Game one of this series, Gil, I don't think you're ever going to see the Canes play another game like that. That might have been the worst game I've seen the Hurricanes play in 5 years. And they had, 12 days off between games? They did not look like themselves. So games two, games three, those are more of what I expected the Canes to look like against Montreal. And if the Habs have any shot in the series, it's got to be an all-time goalie performance from Jakub Dobish, some timely scoring. That's basically how the Habs have gotten here. And Carolina is even better than the teams they faced to get here as well.
No interest in the Canadiens then, plus 350 adjusted series price, plus 370. We're showing.
Honestly, it's not a horrible number just for the magic beans that this team seems to have and the goaltending for Dobish and the fact that the Canes have had trouble in conference finals in the past. I've been of the belief all year, I think this Canes team's different. I think they're deep offensively. We still haven't really seen their top players step up a lot. They did score the overtime winner last night, so maybe a step in the right direction there. If you are interested in it, I don't think it is a horrible number on the Habs. It won't be for me, but if they win game four, they get a little bit of life, 2-2 series, they could be right in this thing. As much as they've been outplayed the last couple of games, guys, they're not out of this series just yet.
All right, Golden Knights and the Avalanche. Improbably, the Golden Knights are up 3-0 in this best of seven Western Conference. Now, Western Conference Finals, we just talked about how the Cavs, the no-account Cavaliers, just laid down in game four against the Knicks. Hockey ain't basketball. This is a coin flip tonight, game four here at T-Mobile Arena, where the Golden Knights are trying to close out the Avalanche four times in the history of the NHL as a team come back from a 4-3 deficit. What do you think about that in terms of, you know, hockey not being basketball and the Avs' chance of actually getting back in this series and perhaps even competing for the victory?
Well, I do think the difference is you are going to get a very desperate Avs team tonight. The only problem is, are they healthy enough to beat this Golden Knights team right now? If you look at all three games, and I've looked at the numbers through all three games, the Avs have been the better 5-on-5 team in all three games against Vegas with zero results to show for it. They led in the third period of game number two. They led 3-0 in game number three, and they weren't able to close it out. I would expect the Avs to make a goaltending change tonight and go to Mackenzie Blackwood. Will that matter? We're going to find out. I do think they could win this game. I think they could maybe even win the next game briefly, get back in the series to win four. Might be asking a lot of this Avalanche team, especially with the injuries that they have, guys. Kale McCarr did come back last game, which was great to see. How healthy is he? You know, obviously he's dealing with some kind of shoulder upper body injury, but he did play 27 minutes in the last game, so he looked pretty good to me. But this Nathan MacKinnon injury is where I really worry. He does not look like he's going to be at 100% tonight. Quotes about him maybe only playing the power play and things like that. I don't think that's going to be the case, but the fact that he's going to be operating at less than 100% makes me think the Avs are just crumbling at the worst possible time, picking up key injuries. I actually like the value on Vegas tonight, guys, as a very slight underdog. Like I said, I think the Avs could win this. You mentioned it's a coin flip, and I think they could win the next game and get back into it. But if I'm making a bet on tonight's money line, it would be with the Vegas Golden Knights and the chance to put this team away, go to a cup final.
Last thing, Chris Valica, the Bear, brought this up in the group chat. I want to say it about the Minnesota Wild. Do you subscribe to this as well? He said, imagine being the Wild. You're up 3-0 in game five, I believe it was, against the Avalanche. If you somehow don't cough up that lead and then McCarr is hurt, right? Maybe right. You actually win that series. They've got to be the team that has the most regret right now of any that's been ousted.
I was thinking about that. We actually talked about it on my show yesterday, and the fact that you had the McCarr injury, 3-0 in that game. Maybe you could have got yourself back into it, but Minnesota will be back next year, guys. When I'm talking to you next season, Minnesota is going to be a team I'll be on heavily.
All right, Jake, always appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, always great, guys. Good luck with the French Open, Gil.
Thank you, sir. You too. Jake Hahn, everybody. Coming back on A Numbers Game right here at Visa. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro. Let's talk some baseball. Mark Borchardt joins us now. He's Base Winner from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert. You can follow him at Base Winner on Twitter, basewinner.com. And of course, the BetUS Baseball Betting Show. You can learn all about it on his Twitter feed as well. He joins us now. How you doing, Mark?
Yo, I'm doing good, man. I'm happy to be here at 8. I thought, well, you know, you're either going to have the Pope or the President on, but it's even better than that. It's Drew Dinsing. And, you know, I got to say something. I love Drew. I got to say something. He's got the lowest base on all the radio dial. In fact, he was on a show on Sunday, and like the base was so low. And I compared it to the, you know, the classic Rewind guys, you know, the, hey, we got a rock block of Dire Straits here coming up, and they're always really low. Dinsick was lower than him on the base level. So props to him, right?
Mark Borchardt, everybody.
Audio breakdown.
Mark Borchardt.
There you go.
By the way, if you want to know more about the comedy stylings of Mark Borchardt, tune into next year's MLB Futures Draft, where Mark tries to take shots at other people in the draft, and they look at him with a blank face. Mark, I thought you were great in that draft, and the audience was terrible.
You know, speaking of that, Jensen, and who I want to call Brady because he sounds like Brady Cannon. I don't know if you interviewed Brady a bunch of times. Check it out next time. But, you know, and I know this is going to hit a bad nerve for you, but Cleveland in the division market, I've got them over 90% of the time, and they're win that division -190. I mean, it's crazy.
Wow, what do you have them at? 90-some%?
I've got them like at 94% of the time. So like I went in, I'm like, what's going on with this stuff? And so like Cleveland's starting pitching, 15. Their relief pitching, 5. Their fielding's #1. And their offense is 18. And you're thinking, well, that's not that great of a team. They shouldn't be 94%. But you're looking at like the next best team is The next closest team is the White Sox. The White Sox, they're all like lower 20s from all the rankings that I have. And then I think the best team, the next closest team are the Royals. They're like 9 games back, and they're not that great. Like 12 starting pitching, 30th in relief, 18 fielding, and then 14 in offense. So I think that's a really good opportunity to because it surprised me. So if it's surprising me, it's going to surprise a lot of people. And I think that -190 is a good way to lay the sauce, Gil.
Lay the sauce. Borchardt coming out firing. I understand what you're saying too, and I'm an under season win total guy in the Guardians, as you point out, but that really is a commentary on the rest of the division more than anything. White Sox, Twins, Royals, and Tigers. Listen, if the Guardians have a swoon here in them, and I think they do, you're looking at a division. I've been talking about the American League West, where the Athletics lead the West with a 27-27 record. You could have 2 divisions in the AL, potentially, that are just flirting with the historic nobody's going to be above 500 kind of thing. Like, that's how bad the American League is. And again, famously, 1994, when the strike hit, the Rangers would have won the AL West 10 games under 500. That's sort of one of the lost, you know, anomalies of that season. But that's an interesting comment. So Cleveland -190 representing great value per Mark's numbers. Can I ask you about something we did here on the show yesterday, Mark, before we get to your picks? We did an NL Cy Young blind resume thing. And this is just, I mean, what a race between Christopher Sanchez and Jacob Mizorowski. Kyle Harrison is in there as well. Paul Skeen, Shohei Ohtani, Chris Sale, Chase Burns, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, on and on. Zach Wheeler also, who's, I believe, a sub-2 ERA, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So all of these guys, this is an incredible race. And we did the blind resume. And for me, this was before Miz Urowski's performance yesterday when he was +450. I was like, Miz would get my vote. I think that's the bet at +450. Now he's +370. Who would get your vote at this point?
Well, if he continues to do what he's done, it would be Mizorowski. I was looking at some numbers yesterday, and his stuff plus was a 132 raw, which was like 7 numbers higher. And I've never seen it like that. I mean, I can't really tell you exactly, you know, the scale of Eno Saris's ratings, but I can tell you that I've never seen a guy that dominant as compared to the next guy in that stuff plus. And boy, he sure showed it yesterday. And then if there's ever like something about Mizorowski, he's like, well, his control, his location, his command's not the greatest. The location plus number was in the 80th percentile as well. So I think that definitely I would be with you on that with Mizorowski, Gil.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the greatest K rates in MLB history. Minimum 162 innings pitched. I think I'm seeing this correctly. So Shane Bieber, that was 2020. I don't think he had enough innings pitched, so that doesn't count. But 2019 was Gerrit Cole, 39.7%. Am I seeing that right? That would be the record, if I'm seeing that correctly. So Mizorowski, 40.3%. I mean, this is, I know it's May, but good God. I mean, this, what this guy's doing is incredible. So you would say the Miz also at this point.
Well, for sure. And then if you look, like, it's, sometimes it's like there's really no luck involved in that. Like the stuff like is right, that much better than the rest of the league, Gil. And like there's some good pitchers in the league. And you just see, I mean, he's throwing 100 miles an hour all the time, seems like. So anyway, yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that's a good call.
All right. By the way, just checking out Gerrit Cole's strikeout percentage that year. Yeah, 2019. 39.9% with a 20-5 record. Wow, you forget how dominant he was that year. Okay, what did you land on today in Major League Baseball, Mark?
Well, I'm going to go with the Cubs here. And I think just from a modeling standpoint, I've got the Cubs as a slight favorite. They're in the market at like +115. Maybe you can get it. But one of the interesting things is of all the teams, the OPS at the venue, the away team, the highest away team OPS at this particular venue, PNC Park, Gil, is 967. That goes to the Cubs. And so, like, you have that. That's really not into the daily modeling, but you have that going for you as an ancillary idea. You know, and it's really wild because you talk about a division that's crazy for, you know, from my standpoint, at least, it's this NL Central.
Yeah.
And the Pirates have beaten the Cubs. They've played four times. They beat them three times. I think the Cubs are a better team overall. No, I think this is a good opportunity to back them as a slight dog. Gil.
Cubs plus 116 today at PNC against the Pirates. Cubs not having a good month of May, but we were just talking about the AL Central and the AL West. Good God, is anybody going to be over 500 right now? It's only the Guardians that are over 500 in both of those two divisions. The NL Central, everybody's over 500, including the last place Pirates at 28-26. No parlay from Mark Borcher today?
I do have a parlay. I've got the Brewers. We talked about the Brewers and the Yankees. And I could go into the numbers for Schlittler, but I think what's more interesting is Harrison's numbers, at least for me. Kyle Harrison, who was just like a middle journeyman in San Francisco, and yes, he's made it all the way to the top of the base winner board, number seven on my base winner starting rating. So you got that going for you. Two better teams, and I think it's a good opportunity. Risk one to win 1.4, Gil.
Who is it? Brewers and who is it?
Brewers and Yankees.
Okay. Yeah, the Kyle Harrison thing, I alluded to it yesterday when we were doing the blind resume. It just shows you with baseball, man. You know, a prospect is a prospect, and we have such, as a collective baseball, you know, group, whether it's the establishment itself or people who are fans or bettors, we have such little patience, right? And sometimes it just takes a few years. Not that everything's sustainable with Harrison, by the way, because some is, but like you said, mediocre with the Giants, 12 innings with the Red Sox, and the Brewers are like, thank you very much. We'll take them. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Gil.
Mark Borchardt, everybody, at Base Winner. Insick joins us now. Drew's sort of a moving target these days on a Tuesday, but we love having Drew in, regardless of when he's able to join us.
Yeah.
And he's here now, the co-host of The Deep Dive with Drew Dinsick and Andy Molitor, and of course, NBC Sports, Bet the Edge, which he does with Jay Croucher. Drew can be found on Twitter at @whale_capper. You can find him now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Drewski, what's happening?
Oh, nothing bad, man. Unless you're Daniel Medvedev.
Yeah.
In that case, everything went bad this morning. What did he lose? Is a -1,000 favorite?
Unbelievable.
Hopefully that's the only big favorite to go down today, if you're catching my drift.
Oh, well, let's try to catch it. We don't have to catch your drift. You can tell us, what is your drift on this today?
Well, yeah, I'm hopeful that Sinner comes through unscathed. Yes. Conditions are not great out there, man. It's hot.
It is hot.
What happened to Rude yesterday? It's very, very, very weird weather for Paris in May. It's usually like we're trying to dodge it's like stick and move, trying to dodge the rain and get these matches in.
That's right.
But they're having, you know, blast of heat here in late May, which is a little unusual and making things tough.
It may, you know, there's no, I don't know. I had a couple bets yesterday on two women who were short favorites who just looked terrible. And I really do wonder, right? I was like, was the heat just too much for them? You're so right about French Opens past. I remember, I don't know what year it was. I want to say it was 2018 or 2019. One of those years where the matches were just so backed up. That's usually, you're absolutely right, what the case is. But this is a whole different thing. Do you have any matches left today that haven't started yet?
I have the over in Altmaier, Felix Auger, Aliassime. That one I have sets over and I have games over. I think that's going to be 3-1 Felix, and games best price I got was 37.5. It's up a bit. I would take over 38.5 at -105 as a better bet than over 37.5 at -120. That's moved a little. I'm expecting Felix to have a war in his hands. Altmaier can play. Not great. We're not going to win, but he can test him.
He can test him. Someone asked me earlier, because I've had a couple spread bets. Do I have a change in philosophy, or am I just taking, you know, games just coincidentally here in a couple of matches? Because I don't usually play spreads, but I think there's been a lot of those here in the early going of players who I think can play with them, but ultimately won't come through. And usually I'm just firing money lines. I don't know if that's how you viewed this any differently than anything else, but that's sort of how, like, Taylor Townsend didn't get there, but I had her plus the games this morning. And she fell apart in the second set as well.
Looked
good for a while. How's it been going for you the first couple of days?
I mean, pretty well. I've avoided any true calamity. Cam Norrie went down. That was fun. Although I didn't win anything. Didn't win anything on that, but Cam Norrie gone. That's enjoyable. It's been a good start to the tournament so far. It's been a little bit slow. This kind of stretching out round one across 3 days has made it to where there's been like some pretty big swaths of time where there just hasn't been any good tennis on.
Yeah.
But that's about to change because you know, this is a pretty loaded field, and I'm pretty excited to see how things are going. I mentioned the rude heat. I don't even know what to call it really, but his heat fatigue issues yesterday. If you missed that, he was up 5-3, up 2-0 and up 5-3 in the third set, had two match points at 5-3, lost them both, and then proceeded to lose, six plus four. Yeah, he lost 10 straight games after blowing two match points, spent an extra hour and 15 minutes on court that he did not need to. Eventually, his opponent, Safelin, got kind of the heat sickness and needed a medical timeout. And I feel like that break specifically saved Ruud from ultimately going down in absolutely inglorious fashion. Considering how physical that was, and he only has the 1 day turnaround before he gets a really, really, really tough test against Medjovic tomorrow. I think he is on upset alert there. I know it's already moved quite a bit. Medjovic is down to like plus 192 ish. I was feeling like Casper Ruud was potentially going to be your bottom half finalist here and your third quarter winner. Played a good amount of him 4-1 to win the third quarter. And now I'm kind of thinking it's probably over before it starts for him. I'm hopeful his team can get him recovered in time to get a win there. But speaking of spreads, I like that spread quite a lot for Medjovic. I think that's going to be a very close match.
Medjedovic tomorrow against Casper Ruud.
Medjedovic.
Yeah. Anything catch your eye on the women's side, just observationally speaking?
I thought, like you mentioned, Townsend was a decent play today, and she had the early break, and ultimately Coco Gauff's return game is diabolical right now. It is so tough. And her serve was miserable in the first set, but then eventually she got a little bit of rhythm, started getting some more first serves in. So feeling pretty strong that Coco is your fourth quarter winner and will represent one of the spots in the semifinals. Sabalenka looked a lot sharper than I expected. I thought she was a little bit on, happy to be here, kind of focus on Wimbledon or the US Open or whatever. And because her clay season has been super uninspiring, but she was sharp as can be this morning. Ultimately, I would say that she probably comes through quarter one unscathed. Quarter four, Rybakina is clearly the player to beat. And then in quarter three, Iga looked amazing, but
she's lurking. The Hamburglar is lurking.
She's lurking.
Yeah.
She's the Hamburglar's lurking.
Yeah.
And even more than the Hamburglar, like Marta Kostyuk, is she ever going to lose? She got that kind of a little bit of a tough draw where she, the super early slot on day one. And sometimes, the nerves will get you in a major, where, you're not quite ready to peak that early. But she was sharp as can be, too. So quarter three on the women's side is going to be the must-see TV for the next 2 weeks.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. To the NBA. Knicks. Eastern Conference representative. Drew, let me just say this in retrospect. Should we have all seen this coming? That in a weak East, the Knicks with the most continuity through the years and the shortest bench, if you will, when it comes to a postseason. Should we all have seen, not to this degree, right? Not to this dominance. But should we all have seen this in the end, that they would be the Eastern Conference representative?
I don't know. The Celtics still have a chance, right?
I think so. Let me check.
Ask Kelly Atkinson.
Kelly,
he'll tell you. Get a lot of good looks.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I don't know, man. Like this whole Knicks run confusing the bejesus out of me because my numbers on them have been static for like 3 years. Like I just didn't see an upside like we have seen from them in these playoffs. A lot of people who follow basketball did see this and did call this, and I was not among them. I just thought this was like, hey, this is a plus four team with a ceiling of plus five and a floor of plus three. And like, you kind of know what you're going to get. The way that they answered the call every opportunity they had to eliminate their opponent was like, maybe there's another gear here. Like those closeout performances were something else from this Knicks team. And now they got the momentum. They got the belief. They don't know that they're, you know, that they're not supposed to win against the Thunder and the Spurs. And one of those two teams that comes through that Western Conference Finals is going to be limping. So why not the Knicks, I guess? I don't know. I did not see this coming. I thought, you know, and this is maybe a little bit kind of too, you know, behind the, you know, cloak and dagger stuff, but there was nonstop talk going to this time last year that the Knicks were going to make a move for Giannis because they thought they needed, right. That was like the piece that they needed to mm-hmm. win in the East. And, you know, I multiple times had Knicks to East queued, like, you know, hey, like, so, you know, the, you know, little birdie's telling me, oh, this is imminent. This is happening. Here's the deal is agreed to in principle. Giannis is going to go into New York. And, sure enough, it never happened. And yet they win anyway. So, yeah, it's impressive. Mike Brown, congratulations to him. I've always thought higher of him than the market in terms of his ability to coach. And the fact that he has these guys playing this well is pretty awesome. But I guess my general sense is the Knicks played no one. They played no one who had a dynamic offensive, you know, a dynamic offensive pieces and an ability to put a point of attack defender on Jalen Brunson. The Hawks had one of those. They had a point of attack defense. They didn't have dynamic offense. Philly had neither of those, and the Cavs had no one to defend Brunson and. That changes in the finals, and I'm not going to be caught, you know, expecting too much of the Knicks. I congratulations. Happy for them to be here. Happy for Knicks fans that they get to see a finals again, but I'm going to be pretty out on them at some point in the finals. It may be after they win game one against whoever comes through this war. I'm not going to be fooled about the Knicks.
We'll talk Thunder Spurs here on the other side with Drew. What he has these hypothetical series prices as Thunder versus Knicks, Spurs versus Knicks, as we just talked about, they're almost identical, minus 280 on the Thunder, minus 270 on the Spurs as we sit here today. Coming back on a numbers game. Creator of the Killer Sports, or the brainchild was his, for the VSiN Killer Sports NBA Playoff Challenge that we're all enjoying. You can follow the standings at contest.killersports.com. Formerly the NBA guru over there at Dr. Bob, runs things at Killer Sports, great database, the best NBA handicapper that I know, and maybe the best handicapper of any sport day to day that I have followed through the years. It's Carl Sack joining us right now on the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him. Really, he's really not a Twitter guy, but killersports.com, killercappers.com is where you can find all his stuff. Carl, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good morning and good afternoon. It's mountain time, so I guess he's thinking mountain.
He's catering to the East Coast audience, yeah. The Knicks audience. Yeah.
Exactly. That's right. Exactly. East Coast people are eating lunch right now.
Real quick, shout out to you again for the Killer Sports Challenge. Here are the standings. Kyle Akins and Steve Fezzik can still get me. Can still get me. This ain't over. It ain't over. Party's not over. Just enough time for me to blow it. So there we go. On the screen there, we show that. Really appreciate you doing this. We had a great time last year doing it. Fezzik was the champ. We had a great time doing it this year. So thank you for making the playoffs that much more enjoyable with all this. Do you enjoy, from your perspective as a guy who like came up with it, watching how different people play this?
It's been really fun to watch. Yeah. To see how different people play it. Just to compete in general, you know, it makes the playoffs all that more fun. It's my favorite time of year, NBA playoffs really. And, it just really makes it even cooler.
Well, Kelly asked a great question off air getting to the playoffs, which is the Knicks with this unbelievable run in the Eastern Conference. We put it in numbers earlier. It's the best in terms of just winning margin. It is the best aggregate winning margin over 10 games, over 11 games in the history of the National Basketball Association, regular season or playoffs. With you as a guy who has your numbers, has your ratings, how dramatically do you adjust on a team like the Knicks after a run like this?
Yeah, from a power rating perspective, I've moved them, I would say, about 3 points. As we talked about, I had the Knicks rated high coming into the playoffs already, just because some of their intangibles, their coach, Their experience, their, you know, their starting five, I think were pretty strong. They were a team that struggled with their depth during the course of the season, but that kind of changes in the playoffs when you're not playing on back-to-back, stuff like that. So, but yeah, I mean, I would think even going back to the start, because they've played, what, 14 games now in the playoffs?
Yeah,
14. I would think even going back to the start of the playoffs that their net plus minus is got to be historic.
Would you have seen this coming from this Knicks team, even though you were higher on them than others? I mean, it's pretty much the same team they've running it back, right? You know, so I guess this is Kat's second year with the Knicks, if I'm not mistaken, second year?
Third year.
So they're running it back. Would you have expected this Knicks iteration to be the one that got to the finals?
I think the coaching helps. I think their extra age and experience helps, you know, because they were in the conference finals last year. And normally we saw it with Oklahoma City a couple of years ago. Like, you need to get to the conference finals and kind of get through that experience, get it out of your system. They lost it last year. So, I mean, coming into the playoffs, I probably would have bet on Boston to get to the finals out of the East, but New York's right behind them, and they've done a lot better. So,
all right, so we have the hypothetical lines for the series: Thunder, Knicks, Spurs, Knicks. Per DraftKings, Thunder -280, Spurs -270. We just asked Drew Dinsick, who's in the Killer Sports Challenge. We just asked him; he had Thunder -400 versus the Knicks, Spurs -350. Where would you put these? Somewhere in that ballpark?
I think. You know, I'm kind of surprised that the Spurs are higher are on the hypothetical series lines, that the Spurs are actually higher than the Thunder.
Well, they're 10 cents lower than the Thunder, -270 versus -280.
That's what I mean. Like, they're bigger favorites. Oh, I see. Slightly smaller favorites. My bad.
But almost identical to your point. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's worth noting the injury situation. Like, are we getting Jalen Williams? Like, I'm surprised Jalen Williams hasn't been, from everything I've read, I'm surprised he hasn't been already ruled out for tonight's game. But then AJ Mitchell, they've ruled out in advance of both of these games, like, well in advance. And so are we going to get him? I'm thinking we are, because it's a good week, 8 days out. But AJ Mitchell, he's an under the radar player that he's worth something. He's tangibly worth something. And Jalen Williams is obviously his plus minus has been interesting, but like, he's still at extra depth. And I guess at the end of the day, I'd like to know what the injury situation is for sure in order to make either of these lines. But I would actually lean towards the Knicks on these hypothetical series lines.
Wow.
I mean, I don't think they should be favorites. I've seen some media come out and say, oh, the Knicks should be. No, they should not be favorites. But
you just don't feel it should be this long is what you're saying. +220 or +220. So the injuries also tonight, not knowing about J-Dub, not knowing about AJ Mitchell, that sort of prohibits a play at this point for you.
Well, Mitchell's out. I'm pretty sure he was ruled out yesterday.
Yeah, he's out.
Williams, I'm surprised, is listed as questionable, and I'm assuming he's out. Given where this line has moved down to, I'm very tempted to play Oklahoma City at, now that it's down to -4 in a lot of places. From a situational perspective, it's Oklahoma City spot. And some of it feeds into that zigzag stuff, but, you know, going back the last couple of years, Oklahoma City has not lost two in a row in the playoffs, and they've covered. I want to say they're 9-0 off of a loss in the playoffs, and maybe 7-2 against the spread. This is definitely a situation for them where they can make adjustments. See, okay, now we've got a game without Mitchell. We can kind of adjust to that a little bit better. They're going to be at home, obviously. That's going to help, especially with that younger team. definitely be Oklahoma City or pass for me at the current number.
Interesting. Okay, so let's drill down just a little bit on what you said. We've talked about this in some form at different times, but we talk about it specifically with Dr. Bob a lot. For those who aren't familiar with the Dr. Bob segments, who Carl and I learned on the lap of, Bob would say neither of us learned anything from him. I always push back on that. I say, we learned a whole bunch from you. But we always say with him, he's got the math model and he's got the technical analysis. What he calls technical analysis is basically what we colloquially call trends, which is just something you were just referring to when you were talking about this game. And it's always a mixture for him. Like oftentimes a trend will take him off what his math model points him to because he has respect for the sample size of a certain trend. And it could be anything from coming off a loss, coming off as a favorite, whatever the parameters are, but it's not data mining with him, right? They're meaningful long-term trends. For you, when you look at a game like this, you analyze games your way as well, but then you do have access to these trends, what Bob calls technical analysis. Is there a sweeping statement you can make about how much you weigh one against the other, or is it a bit of art in that science where sometimes one rules over the other and sometimes the other rules over the other, vice versa?
I've got it honed down to a science, I would say, and it definitely is a combination of the two. From a math perspective, like looking at the fundamentals, I think this spread should be lower. I don't think that Oklahoma City with, if you're assuming Williams is out, if you're assuming Mitchell is out, if you give, it varies by stadium, it varies whatever, but I would say in general, I would make home court in the playoffs about 3.5 points. So are we saying Oklahoma City is better on a neutral court down Williams and Mitchell? I don't know about that. Obviously, experience here is huge. San Antonio's never been, none of these players on San Antonio have ever been to this stage, nor has the coach. So that's tangible. But I situationally, everything definitely points to OKC bouncing back here. And I got to lean OKC in this game. And we'll see.
Interesting. Carl hinting at perhaps what a release might be from Killer Sports today. Maybe he'll go first half. Maybe he'll go full game. Maybe he won't do either. I don't know. I like that Carl's cagey about releasing while this contest is going on, though. That's why
it's funny you talked about first half, because I know Oklahoma City has talked about how they've gotten off to a poor start in both the last two games in San Antonio. That's and right. So I got to think that they're going to come out in this game. And, first half might be the way to go, too.
Kyle Akins and Steve Fezzik waiting with bated breath to see which way Carl goes. By the way, Kyle, he's Killer Sports, right?
Yeah. All yeah. Right.
We might have to get him on here.
Yeah.
Might have to get Kyle Akins on here.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carl. Appreciate it very much.
Of course. Anytime. Enjoy the game tonight, guys.
You too. Carl Sack, everybody. A man who moves lines when he releases plays. Legit. Global Market. Coming back.